prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror movies, specifically those which have fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Erica.
And I'm Lance.
And it is Shawgust.
It is.
And it's also my pick. So no one will be surprised that I bent the rules a bit on this one. And I picked a movie that is not actually a Shaw Brothers production.
Right.
Because I did mention last episode, I was like, Shaw Brothers does Faust kind of thing. And, you know, they did have involvement with it. And we do have pretty much like everyone that's ever been involved with Shaw Brothers, especially the director who is most well known with Shaw Brothers, being involved with the production. So we'll call it Shaw adjacent.
Yeah, I mean, it totally works. I mean, as I was watching it, I completely forgot that you said it wasn't a Shaw Brothers. I thought it was the whole way through.
I mean,
even the production. I mean, everything. It looked like it was on a Shaw set.
Yeah,
like
exactly. I mean, it's the director, some of the cast members, the way it looked. You know, the only thing you don't have is, you know, the Shaw scope intro, and that's it.
Yeah.
It ends the same way. It's all.
I'm going to have to admit that was upsetting to not see hear the Shaw Brothers.
I'll put it in here.
Okay, yeah, right now. Okay, now I'm ready to fucking do this.
Okay, now it's August, guys. So the movie that I am talking about, my pick, is The Nine Demons from 1984, aka The Nine Venoms. As of this recording, it has 246 views on Letterboxd and is available to watch on YouTube. So quick summary of the film. Best friend Zuo-Ki, a.k.a. Joey, and Gan-Yun, a.k.a. Gary. Well, I don't know where that came from, but, you know, is what it is. They witness their father's murder at the hand of their manor's enemies. Joey manages to escape the ambush only to fall into the underworld through the gate to Ashura's palace, which opens once every 360 years. So this is basically like he just fell into hell.
Yeah.
There, he is granted superpowers by allowing nine demons to possess his body so that he may save Gary and avenge the deaths of their fathers. The demons, which require blood for sustenance, soon have a stronghold on Zuo-Ki, or Joey, and they leave a trail of carnage wherever they go. So I mentioned the director is most well known for working with Shaw Brothers, and that is the GOAT, Cheng Che. Mm-hmm. He has directed almost 100 movies, a good number of them being Shaw Brothers classics like Five Element Ninjas, which is the ultimate crowd pleaser. If you haven't seen it, or if you know people who haven't seen it and you're having folks over to watch something like this, you cannot go wrong with that film. He directed the Hammer co-production, The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, The One-Armed Swordsman starring Jimmy Wong Yu, The Boxer from Shang Tung, and a handful of others that I will mention when we get to the quote-unquote Venom Mob part of the cast. So a few things that I learned about him that I didn't know prior to this. So I have both the Shaw Scope Volume 1 and Volume 2 set, and there is a mini documentary about Che in Volume 1. So Che actually started as a film critic and was recruited by Shaw Brothers. He also wrote poetry and novels. John Woo was an assistant director for him and has nothing but amazing things to say about him, of course. And Che actually lived at Shaw Studios in a luxury apartment up until his death in 2002.
Oh, interesting. So he lived there almost his whole life.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure
he stopped making Shaw Brothers movies.
Yeah. They were like, yeah, you can stay here. You were like our...
He's a godfather of Shaw. Yeah.
Yeah. So some of the things that Che is known for some characteristics of his films that you'll kind of see the more of them that you watch, is that his heroes often died in his films. So there's not generally, you know, a complete redemption or very happy ending. And Chang's biography editor said that he thought that death was the sublimation of self-value. So he saw a lot of meaning in the hero dying at the end versus like just having a happy ending.
Right.
A lot of his films have a focus on friendships, specifically between men or sworn brothers. There's less of a focus on love or romantic relationships between a man and a woman. And in fact, there's very few women in a lot of his films. He very purposefully left them out, and he really advocated for having male leads, because at that time, you know, you had movies like Come Drink With Me, where a lot of films had a woman in the lead. And he said, no, we need to have men in the lead. One person in the documentary called it misogyny by omission. Whatever is what it is. I love his movie, so I'm not going to be mad about it.
Yeah, and I'm just going to get it out of the way right now. These are beautiful men that he casts and are made up. Joey and Gary are gorgeous in this.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that doesn't replace having women in leads or anything like that. I'm just saying,
no.
If you do want a woman in a lead Chang movie, these Joey and Gary work. Like, they're just beautiful. Imagine.
Yeah. What's interesting, though, is that Tony Raine has an interview on Set One talking about Chang Che, and he talks about this underlying homosexuality in Chang Che's films. Mm-hmm. Now, Che has adamantly denied this, not surprisingly, especially given the time that he was making films. But like I mentioned, you know, him being a proponent of moving away the focus from women as the stars in Hong Kong films to more masculine leads, that his films included a lot of phallic imagery, had a lot of good-looking, usually shirtless men, especially when they died and were getting impaled. There's a lot of slow-motion shots to, like, you know, for you to be able to take in, like, their naked, glistening, not half-naked, glistening bodies, you know. So he's basically the David Dakota of Hong Kong, right? Except he knows how to direct movies.
Right, yeah. And going back on, like, the shirtless men, I do love... It happens in a lot of Shaw movies, but especially Chang movies, where he, like you said, slow motions, but it's their deaths. The deaths are usually orgasmic feeling.
Yes.
The men slowly get up. They try one last time, and then they're like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's over. The feat is over. Like, yeah.
It is orgasmic. Very well put. Okay. So that's Chang Che. We'll talk a little bit more about how those elements come out in The Nine Demons when we get to the discussion of the film. And I do want to talk quickly about the screenwriter here, and that's Ni Kuang. He has written over 300 wuxia and sci-fi novels. He's actually best known for the Wisely series, sometimes called the Wesley series, which are detective mystery stories which feature extraterrestrial life. There's actually two films based on Kuang's series, the Wisely series, and that's The Seventh Curse, starring Chow Yun-fat, and The Legend of Wisely. And so in The Seventh Curse, Chow Yun-fat's character is Wesley, but then in The Legend of Wisely, the character is Wisely. So it gets, you know, the name is sort of interchangeable. But you can learn more about, you know, Ni Kuang and the Wisely series and these sort of mystical adventure movies in an upcoming essay for me in a future Vinegar Syndrome release for a different movie, not any of the ones that I just mentioned.
Hell yes.
So I'm not giving anything away.
Is it, I mean, you're not giving anything away, but is it a horror movie?
It is a Hong Kong movie, and that's all I will say.
Okay. No hints.
No hints.
Nice.
So besides writing these sci-fi novels, he has written over 200 film scripts. I mean, honestly, if you're looking at Shaw Brothers movies, if you're looking at the writer, chances are very high that he is the one who wrote it. 36 Chamber of Shaolin, The Five Venoms, Dirty Ho, Five Element Ninjas, Super Inframan, Human Lanterns, Mighty Peking Man, Black Magic 1 and 2, and tons more that we'll discuss next episode, I'm sure.
Yes. I mean, he's basically written like almost every Shaw-Gus pick we've done.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Not Bewitched or Portrait in Crystal, do you?
I don't think. I don't know. It's hard to keep track. There's too many.
Yeah, there is.
Okay, so production-wise, Nine Demons was much later in Cheng Che's career. It's 1984. It's quite a bit past the height of his career with Shaw Brothers. And this was actually a Taiwanese co-production and one of six films that was from his own production company, Cheng He Film Company. It also has an alternate title of Nine Venoms in order to capitalize on his much more popular Five Deadly Venoms from 1978. Cinematography is by Wu Kuo Ren, and the score is by Huang Moshan, who has over 300 film credits spanning from 1968 to 1999, and is the height being like late 70s to early 80s, where, I mean, the sheer number of films in each year is insane. I'm sure a lot of it's like reused and repurposed, but still an insane number of film credits going on there. Okay, so getting into the cast, let's talk about Joey and Gary first. So
I keep thinking of SpongeBob every time I hear Gary. Like,
who's Gary? I've literally never watched SpongeBob.
He's the pet, like the dog, like SpongeBob's pet snail.
Okay, his name is Gary.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're just very basic names. It's funny, Joey and Gary.
Yeah. It is interesting. I'm like, so the terracotta DVD that I have, you know, I watched the subtitled version. And so it was their original names, you know, Gan Young and Zhu Kuo.
Right.
Or Zhu Kui. And, but then I know like the dubbed version is...
The one on, I mean, they say Joey about 1,000 times. Yeah. Like, did you watch the one on YouTube as well?
That was when I first watched it a long time ago. Yeah. And I remember that. And I think I actually went through the YouTube one to grab some screenshots from it because I was like, it's easier for me to do it on my laptop than to, you know, take a picture of my TV with the DVD. So, but yeah, they say his name a lot.
Yeah. There's definitely some translation issues and that I take note of it in here, but it's fun. I mean, obviously, English dubbed versions of films kind of add to the humor of it, but yeah, prefer the subtitled.
For sure. So yeah, there is a DVD out there. If you do want the subtitled version, you can pick that up. It's Terracotta DVD. I don't remember when I bought it, but for how much it was. But I mean, maybe this will show up in... No, it wouldn't be in a Shawscope set because it's not a Shaw Brothers movie.
Maybe it's the release you're talking about.
Oh God, I wish. I'm perfectly open to writing about this movie though. So I'm just putting that out there in the universe. Okay. So getting back to the cast. So Gary or Gagnon is played by Chris Lee King Song. He's been in Eastern Condors from 1987, and Burning Paradise, which has a Vinegar Syndrome release. Then Joey or Zhou Qi is played by Ricky Cheng Tian Chi. I recognize him right away from Five Element Ninjas. Mm-hmm. He's also in a movie called The Weird Man, which if I remember correctly, has a really great decapitation in it.
Okay.
That was a fun one.
Also Cheng Che.
That one is Weird Man.
Let's pull it up.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised. Yeah. There's a million of them. So then in the cast, we also have two members of the Venom mob. So the Five Deadly Venoms, we've got two of them plus another actor who's been in plenty of other films that Cheng Che has directed, but he's not one of the actual Five Deadly Venoms. So he's not Venom Mob. But Liu Feng, who plays Liu Shan, or the final battle, the sun in this, he's one of the Venom Mob, as is Chang Sheng, who's one of the three brothers that kills Gary. So those two members of the Venom Mob have been in over 20 films that are directed by Cheng Che. Then there's also Yu Taiping. And there's also an interview with him on the Terracotta DVD. That's the only special feature that's on there. But those three actors have been in these films directed by Cheng Che. So as I mentioned, Five Deadly Venoms or the Five Venoms, however you call it. Crippled Avengers, Masked Avengers, Shaolin Temple, Chinatown Kid, Kid with the Golden Arm, Invincible Shaolin, The Flag of Iron, House of Traps, The Magnificent Ruffians, The Sword Stained with Royal Blood, Heaven and Hell, The Brave Archer series, which has four films, Two Champions of Shaolin, The Rebel Intruders, Shaolin Rescuers, Life Gamble, Legend of the Fox, The Naval Commandos. And there's probably still more that I didn't get, but at that point I was like, okay, I've got like 20. People understand that these right. people have worked together a lot.
I'm gonna throw out one more. It was Shanghai 13 that I watched for June Sploitation,
okay,
which is part of Chang'e's own production company, mm-hmm. one of his few.
Right.
But yeah, he pretty much gathered every Shaw Brothers action star, including those two.
Nice. All right. Moving quickly on this one. That's how we do in Shawgas. And you know what? These movies move quickly, so we're going to move quickly.
Yeah, I like it.
We'll get more into this film right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal: providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Okay, so The Nine Demons, I know like it's, you know, we talk about underseen horror movies and yes. it's very much like, it's a little bit of a cheat. I mean, it is, A, it's not a Shaw Brothers film. B, it's not very horror. It's very much the action fantasy film. And I will definitely lean very hard into that with my double feature pick, but it has horror elements. And we've come across that a lot in Shawgas in the past, especially with something like Portrait in Crystal, which moves at breakneck speed.
Yes.
Where absolutely. You can't even keep up with it. This one, it moves quickly.
It does.
But not nearly as fast as Portrait in Crystal.
Yeah. I mean, the setup for this is super fast, which I loved. Like mm-hmm. the first 15 minutes, especially. But I do think there is a little bit of a lull once like the ultimate revenge or the original initial revenge takes place. And then you start getting into, is Joey a demon? Is he not a demon? Let's figure this out.
Yeah, that middle part of it definitely lags a lot. Like it loses a lot of momentum at that point. I do think that, and it's one of those movies that starts off really strong, has a lot going on visually, especially when you get into the underworld.
Oh, yeah.
But then, yeah, like once that initial revenge happens, then it's a lot of discussions about what's happened already, what is going to happen about this person, stuff that we as the audience already know. And so it's not very well written in that sense. Like it's not really well paced. You know, I mentioned The Crippled Avengers earlier.
Yeah.
And I just watched that for the first time.
Oh.
And that movie is fan-fucking-tastic. But that movie has really great pacing because like, obviously, the four who become crippled, and I'm using the word from there because that's what it is. You know, you get like a section each and it has this really great buildup. It's paced really well. Like you never have that point to be like, okay, how long have I been watching this or how much is left or anything like that.
Right.
In here, you do get that kind of at the midpoint here.
Yeah, you do. I did a quick rewatch this morning. Yeah. With almost like an hour left, that's when it starts like, okay, well, he got his final revenge from from the gang and the mm-hmm. people who killed his father and Gary's father. But yeah, I mean, it still works because when you selected this and said it was Chang'e, I knew like we're in good hands when it comes to the action.
Sure.
You know, you have, you know, Five Venoms, Crippled Avengers. And it does, like you just said, it leans way more. It's a martial arts film,
yeah.
I think, with elements of the horror sprinkled in. But when the horror does pop on screen, it's very original, like, and it sticks with you. I mean, like we already said, the setup is one of my favorite parts. It felt like a Castlevania game. Like first, you quickly establish that Joey and Gary are best buds, they're yeah. pals. They're just going to jump into a fight on the street if it's going to, you know, be fun,
yeah.
but, you know, more importantly, help somebody that needs, you know, some assistance. But within 2 minutes, you know, they're best friends and they're going to fight for the good message. But then when Joey falls into the black paradise, which is what it's called in the translation, mm-hmm. It feels like an old Nintendo 8-bit game, like video game, even with the sound effects, like his equipment, his weapons, his nine little demon swords.
Yeah.
When they're equipped, it's all, it's very like I'm playing a Castlevania game and this is the best. And it's kind of, it's not creepy, but it's, you know there's evil entailed in it. Like, you know that's not going to work out. You know this is where all the element, the horror elements are going to be pulled from with the floating skulls. So yeah, I think it is way more action, like you said, more martial arts, but it's a horror film.
Yeah.
It has
the elements, you know, when he's down in the Black Paradise and Hell, Ashura's Palace, whatever you want to call it. And he makes the deal to, and I was originally going to pick a Faust movie for my double feature pick.
Right.
I started watching the Richard Burton, Elizabeth Taylor one, and it was way too Shakespearean. And I mean,
Is it 2 hours long too, or is it?
No, it's pretty short. It's like 90 minutes, but I haven't finished it yet because I started watching it before bed and that was a mistake because I was like, oh, it's not a modern like take on it. They're like going straight to like the original Christopher Marlowe text. So I do want to finish watching it because anything Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, I'm in 100%, but that's not my double feature pick.
Okay.
But I love that story because there's so much that you can do with it. You know, you've got Phantom of the Paradise. You've got, I don't want to say it because that might be your double feature picks.
Well, now you can say it.
The Pick of Destiny.
Like Tenacious C.
Yeah.
That's not my pick.
Okay.
But yeah, that is a Faustian.
Yeah. Like, so there's so many things to do with it. And, you know, of course, leave it to Hong Kong to do something where the nine demons are these like, represented by these floating skulls who turn into a necklace. And when they become real demons, they are children because children are demons. So fully support this, but plus one woman in it. And they all need blood. So they act kind of like vampires in a way where they'll like kill them. There's like the slaughter at the brothel house that happens and they kill everyone there.
Yeah. And that is a surprising scene to me because that's when you start realizing, you know, the trouble that Joey's in, because those are really the only time that like innocent people are killed. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of fine with it. He's like, okay, you guys need blood, you know, have at it with these unfortunate sex workers. Like, you know, like and that's where I was like, wait, what? Okay. He's starting to get the power hungry. He realizes he has this power. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Yeah.
I like where this is heading.
Yeah. It's like your hero has to have some kind of conflict and here it is, you know, he's losing his innocence to the demons. Mm-hmm. I do love when the demons as skulls get their blood because then they have that like stop motion effect of like the blood going in the veins in the skull.
It's like, this is where Hellraiser got its like ideas for the reverse, you know, blood and the, I don't know.
I'm just thinking
too much.
You never know. Clive Barker might have seen this, but you have like blood sprays like you get in a lot of Chambara films. There's one at the end. I do want to talk about like the end fight, but
yeah,
there is one point where a villain gets impaled by a bamboo rod. And so he's got basically this fountain of blood dripping down and all the little children demon are underneath it, like lapping it up, like they're drinking raindrops or something like that.
Yes.
It's like, you know, cue Slayer Rain and Blood.
Yeah. I mean, those are my favorite scenes. Like the final fight is, like I said, we already said, you know, we know we're having great battles. The very first fight where basically it's Joey and Gary when their fathers are murdered. And then there's just a bunch of, they start throwing these ropes and they're all kind of doing these acrobatic, very well choreographed and just beautiful to watch. But that final fight on the water where they're all in these little mini skis.
Yes.
And they build this little bamboo grid on top.
Yeah.
It's like you're watching a new Olympic sport. It's like ice skating with like balance beams on top of the rink and you got this melted water. That fight scene makes it all worth it.
That one in particular, like, I feel like, you know, because we talked about that lull that hits at about the 1 hour mark or so. Mm-hmm. And that feels like the movie or Che or whatever, all, like, just realized at that point, like, oh, we've kind of lost track here a little bit. Let's throw this wild thing out here at the end to get everyone, to pull everybody back in. Because that scene feels like, you know, you could pull it out and just drop it right in Five Element Ninjas.
Right.
It's that kind of scene.
Yeah. And that is kind of what Shaw's known for, is having an epic final battle. Or like you said, I don't know if it is specific to most Che films, but yeah, I'm thinking of the boxer from, what's it called?
Shang Tung.
Yeah. Shang Tung. Yeah. That final fight, like where
he has
axes and hatchets in him, he's just taking on the world. This final battle is worth sticking around for if you do feel any type of lull. I mean, my favorite scenes too are when not only is there like that weird, the love story is a little weird, you know, after the initial revenge is completed, it gets a little slow when they start talking about Joey. And I feel like when the nine demons pop up, you expect it. Basically, when it happens, you're like, okay, I sat back and I was like, when is this going to happen again? And I want it to happen again because it's my favorite parts, but
yeah.
It is kind of repetitive. But when the nine demon childs, there's one scene, I think is it in the brothel or I think he's attacking. It's like the third fight where they goes after a bunch of the guards when they figure out the demon Joey, but they all start doing like this acrobatic, like tumbling act and stuff.
Yeah.
And it felt like I was watching like an old Russ Tamblyn movie or something, like him dancing around, or the Ross sisters, you know, just doing all these tumbling and jumping on each other's shoulders and backflips and stuff. And that was one of my favorite scenes. And then I think in that scene too, one of the skulls bites on one of the guy's dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved that so much.
Yeah. I think those kids doing the acrobatics reminded me, I was like, oh, I wonder if like they pulled these kids from like, you know, the Peking Opera or something like that.
Right.
You know, that would have been neat. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of other schools where they learn stuff like that. Like, it's not like those kids are acting at any point. Like, they're just tumbling around and screaming and drinking blood. So,
yeah, I mean, they're literally just giggling and laughing and it's creepy.
It is. I do like the sort of the rainbow strobe lights that go on every time the demons do come around, because just adds like, it's not like that gel lighting that we've seen in other Shaw Brothers movies. It's just much more like, it's sort of, they're supposed to be these menacing demons. They drink blood, but like, yet we've got this rainbow strobe light going on. So it's like almost the antithesis of what you would expect.
Yeah.
With something that is supposed to be menacing, these demons that possess your body and are turning you evil.
They're referred to as like black magic by, I think, the girl that falls in love with them. She's like, this is black magic. But I'm like, no, it's just pure magic. It's like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
It's like, they're evil, but, you know, they're like little evil Oompa Loompas that are just doing their host's work. Like,
yeah. There's one other part too, where, so Gary ends up getting, so I mentioned in the summary, you know, Joey got away from the ambush at the beginning. Gary ends up getting kidnapped. Joey is able to save him, but then they split up and Gary ends up getting killed by these three brothers, and he's killed. He gets stabbed by these daggers. So Joey ends up using those same daggers that killed Gary and the demons to kill the three brothers. But I think it's Cheng Xing, like the last of the three brothers, his death, like the skulls. At first I thought they were just like underneath his clothes and like biting him.
Right.
But then I was like, wait, are they inside his body? Because when he dies, it's like alien chest burster, like spraying blood everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. I was also reminded of that scene. Is it the Black Cat where she's in the subway and just kind of explodes?
Yeah.
I was hoping it was something like that, but it kind of rips out of like his belly and his heart area.
Yeah.
That was violent and very good.
Yes. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And then during the last fight too, all the guards are fighting. It's when Joey kind of conjures the nine demon spirits, and because he promised he wasn't going to use magic, but he decides to, because, you know, he has the control of the devil. He's evil at this point. He's kind of accepting it. And then the nine demon children, you know, pop up. They're smiling. They're hopping around, and then they start chewing on the ends of the spears.
Yeah,
they're just like, and then they spit it back, and all the spear heads like go into the guards, and they're all that. Love it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, even though it's not a horror movie, it does have some of the most inventive kills that happen. And I've seen it in quite a few Hong Kong movies where people get impaled and, you know, you see like the blood dripping out of like the bamboo or like the pipe or whatever it may be. It happens in quite a few Hong Kong movies. So they know what works.
Yeah, Shaw Brother films, and I know this isn't Shaw, but they're comforting. Like, if I can't find anything that, you know, if I can't decide on something to watch, I know if I do decide to just pop on a Shaw Brothers film, it's like,
yeah,
it's comforting.
Yeah, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get someone who wants to dominate the martial arts world. You're going to get...
usually revenge, some sort of revenge.
Any kind of revenge happening. If it's a Cheng Che movie, there's not going to be any women in it. Or if they are, they're going to have very limited lines or be sex workers.
They'll be beautiful men, and you're going to have a kick-ass battle at the end. And the ending is a little... I like it. I like it all. But I especially like... and respect how they just throw in that random monk dude who's just sitting there. Boom, who's this guy?
It's sort of like, oh, how are we actually going to solve this? And like, it just last minute write in, Deus Ex Machina or Buddha Ex Machina, whatever you want to call it. I mean, he just shows up out of nowhere and it doesn't make sense, but at the same time, it makes perfect sense. It's like, well, of course there's just a random monk sitting there.
Right. Yeah. And he's kind of like that. Like I said, the English dubbing definitely has problems. Like they call all the villains or the bad guys, they call them baddies. Like, oh, you're a baddie. You must be a baddie. And then they say Joey a million times. But when the monk is like, he pops up, he's just so like dismissive. He's like, go away. You know, he's like, get lost. Stay back. But I know he's there to save the day. And it is a little different than other Che films where the lead dies, you know, in these kind of sacrifice. So this ending I thought was a little cheesy as far as like, I loved it. I loved the very last freeze frame where this is the ending, but the monk is like, Buddha will resurrect you. And Joey's like doing a backflip and it freeze frames on him. And you know, like, oh, he's alive again. Like that's very weirdly, it's a strange happy ending that you're not used to in other Shaw action films.
Yeah. He explodes at the end, right? Like he stabs all the skulls.
Yeah, technically those are kind of child kills when you think about it.
I was thinking about that. I was like, does this count? But then like, no, because like it's killing their spirit. They're probably just back in the underworld now. So it's like killing, it's like an exorcism.
Yeah, kind of. Exactly. It's weird is I think while he's doing it too, the blood, which looks really cool, it's in reverse. Like it's going back into his system, almost like he's healing himself. But maybe that's part of the chant that his friend was doing, Buddha was helping him survive.
Yeah, because he stabs all the skulls and then Joey explodes. And then like you have this ending. So it's weird because it kind of shifts to Luo Shan being the new sort of hero protagonist because he's like, oh, my father was killed and now he's got the revenge. So it kind
he's
of-
he's got the like, girl too. It almost seems like at
yeah,
the end.
Yeah, it kind of shifts over because like I know his name is Ricky, but Joey is like, oh no, I can't be with you. You know, so it shifts to like, we have a new hero. So now it's like when Joey does die, does that even really, you know, it's not quite in sync with like what normally happens in Cheng Che films.
Well, he's resurrected at the end.
Yeah. But like I'm saying, like his death, like normally that would just sort of be the end and like that, oh, the hero's death and whatever. But he's not really the hero anymore, even though like he got his soul back, presumably. So,
yeah, I mean, the hero's the monk. Like he's, he's this dude shows up and just steals the movie the last 15 minutes.
True.
He's just like,
he's a true hero here.
But yeah, I mean, there is, you know, again, you know what you're expecting with Shaw Brothers movies or Cheng Che movies. This one does have, the ending is surprising. It's different than most. And that, it makes it well worth watching for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. I know this was, you know, quick and breezy on this one, but you know, we've talked, this is our third Shawgist that we've done. We've talked a lot about Shaw Brothers and a lot of these actors and directors and writers and all that before. So I'm not surprised this is a shorter episode.
Yeah. We've already spent a lot of time on cast and crew in the past.
Yeah. So I mean, and I know this isn't technically a Shaw Brothers film, so, you know, I'm not, we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about Shaw Studios or anything like that. We've done that in previous episodes as well. So you should go back and listen to those, you know, Happy Shawgist, listen to all those.
Yeah. There's only what? I guess
there's four this previous episodes. This is our fifth. So, but we've got some double feature picks to talk about and then we'll get into Lance's picks. So Lance, what's your double feature pick for Nine Demons?
Okay, well, it was Tenacious D, Pick of Destiny. No, I was kidding.
Oh, okay.
No, there was a lot of, like you said, Faust-inspired, like, adaptation movies. But now the first thing I thought of was The Brood with these killer kids who kind of hang out. They hop out of nowhere, start kind of attacking their victims.
Yeah.
They're like these, and they're kind of, they respond and act on targets, you know, that that their hosts are kind of focusing in on. So they're doing the bidding of kind of like Joey does with the nine demons.
Yeah.
Of course, Heckle and Hype himself is in the brood, Oliver Reed.
Right.
But then I thought, no, I don't want to bring up Heckle and Hype. And I kind of went in an odd direction while watching this. So when the nine demons first popped up, and like these rules are laid out by that, you know, the Prince of Darkness, yeah, the devil, there's some rules tied to them. They start making their appearances throughout the film, kind of popping up, you know, being wild. I kept thinking of Gizmo getting wet in Gremlins. And, you know, the Mogwai then eating after midnight and turning into gremlins. Yeah. And they're just out of control monsters. So, and I was watching this and I began envisioning each demon child having their own personality and look and mannerisms. That'd be cool if they had their own individual nine demons.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, what would a sequel look like? You know, and it didn't happen. It never would happen. Right. So Gremlins 2, The New Batch is the sequel you would watch. After the nine demons, right? It's just so the nine demons is essentially, like we said, like a rough adaptation or inspiration from Faust, almost a parody. It's exaggerated comedy. And Joe Dante, he's gone on to say that Gremlins 2, The New Batch, is straight up a parody of Gremlins. Mm-hmm. He's basically like, let's just make it cartoon like, especially how the gremlins act and look. They're funny, they're kind of cute, they're still deadly and out of control. They just have a wild time together wherever they go. And the nine demons physically are kind of like puppets, and they float around when they turn into skulls.
Yeah, yeah.
They're contorted, you know, not like Rick Baker, like, you know, effects, but special effects. But they're just having a blast in their human form and murdering people. And their killing scenes are basically like gremlins hanging on ceiling fans and jumping over bar stools.
That's true. Yeah.
So I got this feeling of these floating skulls having personality. So that's my double feature pick. Gremlins 2.
I like it.
The New Batch.
Amazing. That's okay. So this, I haven't seen either of the Gremlins movies since I was a kid, but something that always bothered me and still bothers me is like, okay, you can't feed them after midnight.
Right.
When does that period end? Like, when is it not, like, technically after midnight, you know?
Probably, I'm just going to take a guess. I'm going to say
you're
sunset.
It's
sunset.
You think sunset?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Yeah. See, we never get a definitive answer in the whole, like, don't feed after midnight. It's like, well, but until when? Like, when can I start? Like, sunset makes sense, but there was never a definitive answer given to that and always drove me fucking nuts.
Did you ever watch Key and Peele? There's a sketch where it's like, in the boardroom, the ideas of the production company coming up with Gremlins 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hilarious. I would actually pair that in with the double feature. It's like a 6-minute sketch, but it's just them walking around saying, like, it's Jordan Peele who's saying, all right, let's just have crazy fun. What do you got? And they're like a girl gremlin. He's all okay. Like a gremlin, like with girl with makeup on, just showing off. Yeah. Her boobies in the movie. And like going down, everybody's just throwing out wild ideas. One guy's like, Hulk Hogan? He's all, let me get this straight. You want the Hulkster to break the fourth wall and be in this movie? I love it. It's in the movie. Like, it's just a wild sketch.
That would be great.
And that's Gremlins too. It's fucking wild.
Yeah. It would be great. Put it in the pre-show for this double feature.
There we go.
There you go.
So you mean like, what if there was like a brainy gremlin?
A brainy gremlin.
You talking about a gremlin with glasses who could talk and sing New York, New York? That's brilliant. It's in the movie done.
Whoa, you said that nothing was final.
That was before I heard the words brainy and gremlin in the same sentence together. It's done. I love it. It's in the movie next.
What about a spider gremlin?
You mean a gremlin with eight legs and a thorax just catching pretty ladies in a web in an office building? Oh my God, it's in the movie. I love it. Next.
What about a bat gremlin?
You mean a gremlin with leathery wings just flying around, flip-flopping, bust through a wall, make a perfect bat symbol in the wall, get outside, get in some wet concrete, jump up on a building and just dry in place like a gargoyle gremlin? We are cooking with gas now. I love it. It's in the movie next.
Could there be a female gremlin?
Lipstick, boobies, bitch, you have me, and little gremlin vajayjay. I love it so much that it's not only in the movie, but it's definitely in the movie. There's no backseas on that one, no penny taxis. Yes, in the movie. Done.
What about yours?
So I did want to definitely go with a Shaw Brothers proper movie for this double feature. And I did mention earlier that I wanted to definitely lean into that action fantasy aspect of it. You know, I think it teeters off the rails a little bit. It never quite goes fully. You know, it has some like wild elements that, you know, are like, whoa, but I want one that's like, people are just going to be like, what? So there was one that I did want to watch. I didn't get a chance. John has it downloaded and he couldn't, he's got it on one of his like 20 hard drives. So he couldn't find it, but he has it somewhere. So I haven't watched it yet, but I'm going to try to get to it before we record your episode. And that's Heaven and Hell from 1980. And that was written also by Nee Kwong. And so I do want to get to that. So hopefully I can talk about that next episode. John can never find it. So I did, it was going to be between that and my actual double feature pick. And that ended up being Demon of the Lute from 1983, also written by Nee Kwong. So that's my only connection here, other than like some genre overlay with the action fantasy part. But this one, if you watch it, the opening credits are animated as if it's like some kind of like superhero anime type movie. And you're like, wait, am I watching a kids movie? It's like, it is like a comic book movie almost, because everything is like so over the top. Everyone's got some kind of superhero power to one in one way or another. And it's basically about, you know, the big baddie has this demonic lute and he can play the instrument and it kills people, and he wants to use it to, you know, take over the martial arts world, as you do in these. I don't know how a lute helps with that, but it does. And the only way to stop the lute is with the magic bow and arrow. And so you have these two characters. I can't remember their names offhand. I just watched it, of course. A man and a woman who team up. They're like, okay, we got to find the, they have to go to all these different places and put together all these clues to figure out, like, they have to find this person to get the bow and this person to get the arrow. They team up with this father and daughter who have this like puppet show, but are also thieves. And wow, there's tons of great characters. I just posted a picture on Instagram of one of the villains in it, who's got this wild fluorescent red hair. It's super fun. It moves at like, it never stops. Like, it's always something. Like, there's a few scenes where you're like, yeah, we didn't need the scene of the kid getting drunk. Like, we could have, but they skip over so much. They're like, oh, we're here now. Okay. It's not like breakneck Portrait in Crystal speed, but it's definitely, you will never get bored. And it's massively, massively entertaining. It's not gory at all. It's kid friendly. So I would start with Nine Demons, and then I would just push the throttle into hyperdrive and throw on Demon of the Lute 1983. I did have to download this one. I think when I looked it up, I did see that there are some like foreign Blu-ray releases of it. So, you know, maybe this will get a proper stateside release at some point, but it's a lot of fun. So I would definitely recommend checking it out. Discord folks, if you're interested, if you really want to watch this one, just message me on there and I can share it on Google Drive or something like that. But yeah,
send it my way too. Okay, that sounds like a video game too. Like,
it is
with the bows and the loot and like it's Zelda, the Legend of. I didn't bring up too the power plaque in the Nine Demons. They call it the power plaque in the translation. And again, that felt very like when he has it floating and it just appears in his hand. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is like you're equipping your character. It's I love it.
I forgot about that too. Yeah. It's got a great costume too, like the cape and all of that stuff, like gold and, you know.
Yeah, those complementary colors of that purple and gold, like it's, Joey's the most gorgeous man in the world.
I mean, he really is, like, yeah. Chang Che thinks so too. All right, Lance, next pick.
Okay, this isn't Chang Che. This is Shaw Brothers though. Ghost Eyes from 1974.
Hell yes.
Directed by Kwai Chi Hung, so you know you're in good hands.
Oh, good hands again, yes.
My favorite Shaw Brother horror films are Kwai Chi Hung, Boxer's Omen, Bewitched, Corpse Mania. I'm sure we'll talk about some of those. They all just get better and better with every rewatch. So I'm excited to watch Ghost Eyes again. I watched it for the first time for last Shawgust. I have a feeling I'm going to like it even more this time.
Yeah.
It has a wacky premise. Bao Ling is a nearsighted manicurist, and a stranger strolls into the beauty shop she works one night for a treatment. He's very suave. He's a suave guy. He seems to take an interest to Bao Ling while also being very aware of the placement of the mirrors in the beauty shop. After the shop closes, Bao Ling is crossing the street, and the stranger saves her from a near-fatal car crash that destroys only her only pair of glasses. And claiming to be an optometrist, the stranger comments that she should consider contacts. And after a scheduled eye exam, he gives Bao Ling a pair of possessed contact lenses, which have an unwanted side effect, given her the ability to see dead people. There's some other effects too. It also has the ability, he has the ability to hypnotize her into performing these sex acts night after night. So is this stranger, Mr. Chai, is he some weird horny vampire with like glowing eyeballs who just happens to work as an optometrist by day and has supernatural powers by night? Well, we're going to watch it and find out. We're going to talk about it. It's a wild one. We've already said like most of these don't have the arguably obnoxious pacing of Portrait in Crystal. This one moves fast, but it also has, it's a little slow in some parts. We had a blast covering Portrait in Crystal last year with our friend Ian Jane.
Yes.
From Rock Shock Pop. And you know what, Erica? He's going to join us for this episode.
Of course he is.
He's Shawgust. Yes, he's joined us for every Shawgust, and I'm keeping the tradition alive. So we always have a fun time chatting with him when he's on. So he's going to help us out with Ghost Eyes and join us for this next episode. It is on YouTube with English subtitles. It currently has 229 views on Letterboxd, but Ghost Eyes, Shawgust, Ian Jane.
Hell yeah. Going to be a great episode, folks. Be sure not to miss it. If you're not already, you can follow this podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd at Hex Massacre.
And I'm on Letterboxd and Instagram at L Shibe.
You can also join our Discord. We've got people sharing what Shaw Brothers movies they're watching. If you're on Instagram, share those in your stories, tag us. Love to see what other folks are watching because they don't have to be Shaw Brothers horror movies. I'm watching stuff that I haven't seen before. And
same.
There's 700 movies. None of you have seen all the Shaw Brothers movies. I guarantee that. So, I know not all of them are available to watch. You know, Shaw Brothers, they don't make it easy. Thanks, Mona Fong. But share what you're watching, Instagram, even Twitter, Discord, all of those things.
Yeah.
We want to hear from you, see what you're watching. But otherwise, we will see you next episode for Ghost Eyes.
Bye.
Bye.
Wu-Tang martial expert. There's not many who can match up with him.
Get your heart condition.
Prestige, nigga, please. I black that eye like peas. You better breeze in your tracks. A Wu-Tang, killer bees on your back. I come for the honey, puff the fat on the sack. You want it all? Yeah, I want it all like that. I stab my own moms in the back for a stack. Niggas like, damn, why you want it like that? Cause I'm a dog and I got no love for the cats. Attitude's cold like the North Polar caps. Where I do my dirt's a little rubber down the map. A little buck wilding, Allen Gold stats. When niggas carry gats and they black hoodie hats. Now I'm at no the bone and the rap, yeah. And he's an unknown with a bumpy contract. Wake up his brother, bet your motherfucker contact. Calling in a cypher and I'm throwing head cracks. An Indian giver and I'm about to take it back. Shallon, Allen, baby, where you at? A runaway train that be running on your tracks. That's how it's going down, yeah, it's going down.
I got my thing.
And tap your jaws, spot your 20 points and you still can't score nothing, cause you ain't got no points in this game. Kid, you frontin', I'm home run and you be buttin'. Brush out the toilet, I got my shit together. When I'm good, I'm good. When bad, I'm better. You want it, whatever. I'll be the stormy weather. Rain coming down, the weather with your leather jacket. A nigga with an axe couldn't hack it or spark him like a match. Coming back, it's the match it. Say it loud or dimension. Man, clap your hands.
Now check it. See me in the lid from my back, busting flicks on my physical. Mother came through and got me lit. Naked, and I walk by, give me the eye. The moment is fucking me up, killing my eyes. Nigga, get back, you pussy cat. I'm saying some, basically that. I'm all of that, and then some. Voila, was out on tour, but went berserk. I heard you was at the sandbox and kicking dirt. All on my name, but you can't pull my bow. You don't know me, and you don't know my style. Remember that there like that, there, yeah.
Hey, it's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about 1,000 cats would look like?
It's called Night of 1,000 Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video!
Woo!